Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
I think you guys know by now how I feel about Jimbo and that stuff. That's besides me. That, you know, I don't make those decisions and whatnot, but he was obviously huge for us last year, and I'm excited to, you know, when he is here, to be able to get with him. I obviously love Jimbo, but it's just like anyone. Whenever someone's not here, it's a great opportunity for the guys that are, and, you know, seeing Ray and Ty and, you know, Diev and Frank just get those opportunities. Like, everybody kind of benefits from that, and, you know, but I am excited whenever Jimbo is back with us.
Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Thanks for coming along with us here on this Monday. Bills mandatory minicamp opens tomorrow. Spend some time this morning talking about James Cook because Adam Schefter, his latest from his podcast. Actually, Josh, you want to run that? We got that. Rather than me just saying it, let's have Adam Schefter say it. The latest is, and to me this is the first insider that I've heard say, yeah, this is going to stay bad for a little while. Here's Schefter.
But I don't think we'll be seeing him at Buffalo anytime soon. And again, the start of training camp will be the next critical moment. If they don't have a deal done there by then, does James Cook show up for training camp? Does he risk the penalties that come along in the collective bargaining agreement if he doesn't show up? But look, we've seen the Philadelphia Eagles this offseason reward Saquon Barkley. We've seen the Baltimore Ravens reward Derrick Henry. We have not seen the Buffalo Bills pay James Cook yet.
Schefter, he also said, in addition to that, that Cook has disconnected himself from the team and city and put his house up for sale.
We knew that.
Yeah.
We saw the listing, what, was that 2 months ago now? It was a while ago now that he did
That's right, because the cords were hanging. And
yes.
And there was a pile of clothing that led people to say he has an invisible dresser because they're just clothes without an actual dresser. Anyway, when I was young, I probably had an apartment look like that too.
Yeah. I'm now I am obsessive about making sure the cords are hidden behind every TV. It's up on a wall.
Yep.
Behind the wall, one way, shape, or form.
So, all right, latest on Cook. If you want to throw your thoughts at us, we'll be happy to have them. 803-0550, our phone number. You can watch us on the stream. You can comment. You can subscribe to WGR's YouTube channel. You can like it, all that good stuff. Is there an angle that we have not yet explored?
No, I think.
Is the trade one?
What would you take? Like trading him away?
He demands a trade. That's something that is along the line of, you know, all right, well, next step, what do? We request a trade. And then, boom, the agent requests a trade, something Jonathan Taylor did do.
Yeah.
Taylor was unhappy. You know, Schefter's framing there, you know, sometimes you have to wonder if it's his own opinion, if he's somewhat relaying the feelings of someone in the process. As he says, Barkley got rewarded. Derrick Henry got rewarded. He's talking about the top running backs in the league getting paid. And I don't think anybody around here thinks James Cook is on the level of Saquon Barkley or Derrick Henry. I'd argue he's Jahmyr Gibbs, and he's in that neighborhood. And Gibbs is not yet paid. Will the Lions pay Gibbs? Because the Lions have Gibbs and a guy that they've paid in David Montgomery. And that's a 1-2 punch. That's a shared backfield. Would they pay them both? By the time they're due to pay Gibbs, Montgomery might be done there, and Montgomery got hurt late last season. So
Gibbs, even though, like, Gibbs is a much bigger part of his offense than Cook is. Like, Cook, the touchdowns are similar. In fact, they both scored They both score 16.
Their touchdowns are similar. Their yards over expectation running the ball are similar.
All right. But Gibbs was like 50 yards short of 2,000 yards last year, and Cook had 1,200.
Right.
So
how many snaps?
He plays more. I don't know how much more he plays because he's splitting a backfield with David Montgomery.
He's splitting it one way, whereas Cook is splitting
That's fair.
Two ways.
That's right.
I want to just at least.
It's a 7% or 8% difference. Gibbs played 56% last year, and Cook played 48%.
Okay. So, I mean, like, he's getting a lot more. He's getting more targets in the passing game. I mean, Gibbs is a big part of that, whereas in the Bills passing game, I've got Ty Johnson that's arguably their best pass-catching back.
That's right. Yeah. Gibbs, I don't want to fall into a trap with him because I want to believe in those numbers, yards over expected, and, like, you know, he plays on a team where his offensive line is, someone said earlier in the day that the Bills have the best offensive line in football. They might. If they don't, Detroit probably does. Like, although their center just retired.
Yeah, Ragnar just retired.
They're still probably really, really good. Gibbs, I mean, his nickname on Peripheral Reference is Sonic. When he gets in the open field, it's crazy. He's so fast. But
anyone else sound like that? Anyone else do that last year? James Cook did that last year.
He did, but
in the open field, that's what he was.
Cook's fast, but I do think Gibbs has another gear. But
he might be shiftier.
That might not matter. It really might. It might not. Like, Devin Achane is the fastest back in the league, and he stunk last year. His yards over expectation were terrible, and he didn't run. He was under 4 yards a carry. So, like, just who can run the fastest straight ahead is not a measure of how good you are. But Gibbs, maybe it's also that he was a first-round pick, and the expectation, he was more of a player in college. So, okay, they're close enough. They will pay him, I bet, in Detroit, though.
He's a first-round pick, so they have more time to do it. They have fifth-year option.
And when you draft a guy in round one, isn't there a little bit more? 12 overall, by the way. Where was Cook? 60? Mm-hmm. Like, a big difference in picks. It's not just a one-round difference between the two. Gibbs was a high-ish first-round pick, whereas Cook went near the end of round two after the Bills had traded down a couple times. The investment is different. So that's a part of the scope of it as well. What would I trade him for? I mean, I'm not really worried about the compensatory pick part of it.
No, nope.
But I'm not trading for a draft pick, right? Like, don't I want a back in exchange? I was tweeting back and forth with Greg Thompson over the weekend from Cover One about contract stuff and what's going to happen with Cook. And when he said something that made me think about, I've been mentioning Jonathan Taylor. Like, oh, the Bills will never, if they don't pay Cook, they're not going to pay a running back. And I'm thinking, well, probably, but in a year, Jonathan Taylor is going to be available. And the Bills could think Jonathan Taylor is a better running back than James Cook. They probably should, a little bit. He plays way more if you need him to. He does all situations. And the trade he threw out was something along the lines of, I got to find it, Cook and Epinesa. We're just going to throw Epinesa into every trade, I think,
that's
between
right
now and the start of the
that's
season.
Right.
But something like Cook and Epinesa, here it is, to fit the salary in, because he's got, Taylor's got 2 years, $24 million left in his deal, but next year there's no guaranteed, so, you know, there's a big dead cap. You'd probably want to redo it. You send Cook and Epinesa and a fourth to Indy for Jonathan Taylor. Would you do that? Because that's not draft picks. That's not, oh, I'm doing things for the future. I'm still trying to win a Super Bowl right now.
Well,
is there a deal though where you're not getting a running back that is going to sound good to people? Because no one's going to want draft picks. And what other position? What are you going to trade James Cook for? You're going to trade him for a defensive end?
It's not realistic to think about trade. I've never thought it to be all that realistic to trade him, because he wants a contract that the team that acquires him is going to be willing to pay him. Back to the Gibbs point, because I just want to do that. You know, you mentioned Taylor. Okay. I'm not here to tell you that rush yards over expectation is the Bible and we all have to sign up for that. But if you want Jonathan Taylor, he's a guy that finished below James Cook in rush yards over expectation. Here's the list of players that finished ahead of Cook. Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, Jordan Mason, Chuba Hubbard, Jerome Ford, Bucky Irving, Jahmyr Gibbs, end of list. And Gibbs, on yards over expectation per carry, was better than Cook. But Cook has been in the top 10 for two straight seasons.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, oh, his line is good. That's, what would the average running back do on this play block this way?
Mm-hmm.
He's a top 10 guy at getting more. In fact, if you want to not boil it down to, Well, 0.82 yards per attempt. What does that mean? You know what his rushing yards over expectation was in the most important game of the year? The Chiefs. He ran
The AFC Championship?
The AFC Championship game. He ran 13 times for 85 yards in that game. Well, the line is so good. I know. I wouldn't dispute that. His rushing yards over expectation, according to Next Gen Stats, was 36. So the line, according to Next Gen Stats, would have blocked up 13 carries for the math.
50-something.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's not amazing.
49.
That almost speaks to the line got him 50 yards,
The line got 13 for 49. Is that a good day? Not really. It's okay.
But even
he got 13 for 85. Rush yard, again, I'm not trying to tell you that it's everything, but it's just here's a data point where they do the league, the whole league, and then they say, and this number says this guy gets more than he should. He's the best on the Bills at it. And
he definitely, I don't know how much of that over expectation was on that touchdown run, but it's at least three.
Right, the touchdown run was
He gets met at the 3 yard line. I feel like that plus three on that number should be like plus 100 because of how you get a score on it.
To me, that's one of the flaws in like rush yards over expectation is if you break one at the 5 where you would have gone 95, whatever.
Right, that's right.
But whatever. The point is, I think he's good. And his lack of production is in part built into the system, and the Bills might like it that way.
Well, and it's his limitation. I mean, that game is kind of a microcosm of the debate of whether or not you pay him, how much he's worth, how much the Bills would like him, because that game, he was awesome. 30 yards more than he should have. He scores on that touchdown when he should have got met at the 2 yard line. He finds a way to get in. He was, other than Josh Allen, he was the best player on the Bills that day.
About 3 yards over expectation per carry,
right,
which no one touches on a season wide basis. But that's how good he was in that game.
Best player on the team that day, arguably not named the quarterback. And yet, on the last drive of the season, which was the most important drive of the year, he's not out there. He's not out there.
And how'd it go for him?
For the Bills?
Yeah.
Well, they ran the ball.
They ran the ball
without him out.
They gave it to somebody else.
But that is a look into what they don't trust of him. They don't trust him to be out there in those spots because he's either too small or he's not good in reading it. They don't trust him to protect Josh Allen and they think Ty Johnson's a better receiving back.
Okay. And did they throw
catching the football, they think Ty Johnson's better.
On the final drive, did they throw to Ty Johnson? They handed it off to Ty Johnson.
They did.
And then could James Cook block screens? They threw a screen to Amari Cooper. They were trying to throw the orbit motion when they got completely blitzkrieged on 4th and 5.
That's right. But this is why I bring up Taylor, because the Bills, are they going to want to pay a running back like that?
If
they don't put him on the field like that. Because 48% of snaps for James Cook last year, Jonathan Taylor played 80%.
That's better use of your money if a guy's playing that much.
Exactly. I've often thought the Bills would never pay a running back like this, a second contract, giant money. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe they would do that. I feel like it's much more likely that they would pay that money to a running back that plays like that. That plays like Taylor's out there all the time. That's a star back versus a guy that is really good and they like, but in critical spots, they might choose a different guy who makes a vet minimum contract.
Get to Eric and Asell in one moment, but I want to ask you this before we do that. How is that any different from the way they approach receiver? They would pay a top, top, top guy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have one. If they did, they'd pay him. And if they had Jonathan Taylor or Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley, they'd pay that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But since they don't, they won't. And it's probably it's a good way to do business. Let's not elevate a guy beyond what he is.
Like if Zach Moss had become Jonathan Taylor,
would they have kept him and paid him?
They would have paid him.
No.
Right?
And if Keon Coleman...
Probably.
And if Keon Coleman becomes Justin Jefferson, they'll pay that dude $40 million a year. Like, they're not against it, but now, in the absence of one, it kind of appears like you don't pay that.
I'm sure of that about receiver and all these other positions. I don't want to say I 100% know it about running back because we've never seen them. They've chased it to an extent, right? Day two picks.
Mm-hmm.
But they have not spent a first round pick on it, and they have not traded for one of the big names, right? They have not signed one of the big free agents. You know, they didn't go sign Derrick Henry last summer. I don't even know if they tried.
Should they have?
Did they even talk to him?
They maybe should have.
Maybe, but But again, that's part of the point. Like, even if they had a guy like that, I wonder if they would pay him. I would bet they would, but these other positions, I'm sure of it. If Keon Coleman becomes A.J. Brown, they are signing Keon Coleman.
Yep.
If T.J. Sanders becomes Aaron Donald, they are signing T.J. Sanders, and so on and so forth. If Ray Davis becomes a top 10 back in the league in the next, if Cook leaves and he becomes like a Pro Bowler, perennial Pro Bowler, I'm not sure they'll pay him.
Would they have the same approach the Giants did on Barkley? Again, the Bills would be good. But what did Joe Shane say that day? We're not paying Danny Dimes this money to hand off.
Right, and that dude worked in the Bills front office yep. for 5 years.
Eric on a cell jumping in. Hey, Eric, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How you doing, fellas?
Good.
Excellent. I just want to say James Cook never had to be this extra about it from Jump Street. He came out of the cannon all fired up like the Bills are doing something egregious against them. And to that, I would just simply say to James Cook, bye, Felicia. Thanks, boys. Peace.
Thanks, Eric.
I don't know how extra he's been lately, though. And even extra, whatever. He tweeted $15 million. You know, he's said some things. It hasn't been that bad.
Well, this is where it's about to – that's the next step. Skipping mandatory minicamp, racking up $100,000 in fines.
Right.
He missed voluntary OTAs, and he was the only guy to miss, outside of Josh, who just got married. He missed the second week of OTAs.
Yep.
He's definitely – at the start of this, when it was one tweet, I thought, who cares? You know, it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've gone along, I kind of tend to agree with Eric. Like, this could all be quiet. Put it this way. What if Schefter – no, I don't want to say that. I was going to say, what if Schefter had the same report, and we didn't have the tweet from Cook about $15 million? Because what he did there is he fires the opening shot. The Bills would never have said a word. None of this would have been public. It would have been us speculating. And maybe there would have been a report. Hey, James Cook's really not too happy. He's going to report, but he's not happy. And if that had been the way things had been handled, would people be more sympathetic to his position? Now, listen, he's got no safety net. He's there. He's working. He's at OTAs. He's at mandatory minicamp. And there's all these reports. Nothing directly from him, no tweet, no podcast, none of that. Nothing from his brother. The plan at that point instead is we're going to go radio silent, but we're going to leak it just to the insiders. I'm hearing Cook's not happy about his contract. I'm hearing he wants more. Then the story's out there, and we don't have the caller. I mean, he's not alone to say as soon as he made it about himself and as soon as he went public there, he lost people. Like it or not, I don't necessarily think you should bail on a guy because he makes his demands public, but I don't think it's deniable. I think it's undeniable, rather, that people will, you know, check out on you.
It is worth pointing out his last tweet, unless there's one in between here, but I love you, Buffalo, quote tweet, but it was quote tweeting and a report that Saquon Barkley was getting paid.
Okay.
So I don't... Do what you will with that. He also retweeted Thurman Thomas saying, pay Cook.
All right. There you go.
Right. So I don't think there's anything wrong with what he's done. I think he has not really been that overt about it. He's definitely told you what he wants, and he's definitely made his intentions clear that he wants a contract. But to this point, I don't think he's done anything that's out of the ordinary or even by league standards, is that controversial? You know, I think he didn't do – what did Trey – I mean, I guess he wasn't around to do this, but what did Trey Hendrickson do a couple weeks ago? He did 20 minutes of media where he basically put the organization on blast.
Now, that's an organization that deserves to be on blast.
That's true.
Frequently.
But Cook didn't do that.
No, that's right.
Cook hasn't done that yet. And
that'll be episode one of Hard Knocks.
I was going to say, if he – maybe I'll be wrong. I don't expect him to do that.
No.
Whenever he talks for the first time. So, I don't know. Like, has he lost some people? I think the dude's just trying to get paid, and I don't really think he's even been that aggressive about how he's gone about it. A couple of tweets to me is not... A couple of tweets, and what did he say? He said something at a poker tournament. That's the extent of what we got? And what did he even say at the poker tournament?
I forgot already.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't crazy. So, I don't know.
803-0550, our phone number, and 1-888-550-2550 if you want to join us, Jeremy and Joe. Coming up next, we'll get Matt Parrino's thoughts on this of New York Upstate and the Shout podcast. And also a post-fight breakdown. Patchy Mix made his UFC debut. Maybe you were up watching it on Saturday night, and he lost in his UFC debut. He's been a fighter for quite a long time. Did not go his way. We'll talk to Matt about how things went and where things go from here on Patchy Mix. It's coming up next. Matt Parrino here on WGR.
We've seen it happen before when you come from, you know, the smaller shows and get to the UFC. Some people shine it. Some people have a rough time. It's not easy.
Dana White on the debut of Patchy Mix, Angola's own Patchy Mix, had his first UFC fight on Saturday night and lost on decision. Matt Parrino joining us, a resident, you know, like fight fan, fight expert, covered the UFC for many, many years, of course, covers the Bills now. We'll get to James Cook and his fight in a minute. But first, on Patchy Mix's debut, Matt, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
All right. You and I were up watching that fight. We were tweeting back and forth a little bit about it. And, you know, it's interesting whether it's, you know, the jump to UFC, which, you know, if you want to make a case that that's a higher profile, whatever it might be. Matt, leading into the fight, talking about Patchy Mix, Joe Rogan's there calling him an elite fighter, and expectations were sky high. And watching the fight start to finish, it just kind of, it right off the first round, right out of the gate, it just didn't look like he was all there. Like something was missing from his fight game.
For sure. And the big thing that was missing was his wrestling and his ability to take it to the part of the fight that would have put him in an advantageous position, which is on the ground. And, you know, I think by the midway through the second round is when he maybe attempted his first takedown. Listen, you mentioned I covered the UFC for many years. Usually when guys come over from other promotions, guys that really ran through, you know, Bellator, PFL, whatever the case may be, there is the term octagon jitters for a reason. It's something that when guys get into that environment, it's a new environment. The UFC does it like nobody else. The amount of media that you do throughout the week. You know, I wasn't even thinking about this much, but Patchy fights at 135, and he gets down professionally, and it's not a huge deal. But over the years, you know, 20 fights into your career, when you've been doing that weight cut for that long, I mean, on a short fight camp, he took this fight on 3 weeks' notice against a guy that has fought champions in the UFC, a top 10 fighter. I mean, all of those ingredients in one bowl, and you just had a debut that just didn't go the way that I think he wanted to. Now, the good news is, like, if you go back through the history books and where guys that have really ascended to be top five championship caliber fighters, you know, the most recent example is probably Justin Gaethje. He lost two of his first three UFC fights after coming over, and I think it was PFL. And he was really, like, everybody was like, this was what the big deal was made for this guy, and he comes over and he really struggles. So I don't think that anybody should close the book on Patchy Mix. I think that he probably has some questions to ask, like within his own camp, like, you know, coaching, game plan, all those kinds of things that elite fighters fine tune based on results. But he don't get it mixed. And I think Chael Sonnen put out a video that I thought was really good on him. That just, you didn't see the version of Patchy Mix that everybody's been talking about over the last couple of years. And I would very much be willing to wager that the next time he steps in there in 3 months, 6 months, whatever it ends up being, that's the true litmus test for what he is and what he's going to be in the UFC.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
When it comes to a loss in a debut like that, like you mentioned other guys that have lost right out of the gate, will the rankings or whatever, the people that, that decide who is the best potential contender, will they take that into account? Will it be, again, he'll have to win fights to recover from this, but will it be the kind of thing that's kind of written off a little bit? I'm almost looking at, like, the Bills lost to the Ravens 35-10, and then by the time, you know, a couple months later, it's like it's a pick'em game because people understand that sometimes you just have a bad day.
Yeah, so I think first off, like, the hype completely gets deflated around him, right? So, like, when he fights on the next card, maybe he's fighting as the third fight on the main card of a free show, right? Like, maybe he's not on a pay-per-view again. And you're right, he's going to have to win a couple fights to get back into title contention, because we were talking about going into this thing last week that it, with an impressive performance there on the same card, you know, that could be something that gets his name thrown into the hat of contenders. Now, you're probably two or three really good wins away from that. And so it's got to be deflating. It's got to be something that this was building for so long. Unfortunately, because the UFC is the machine that it is, you don't really get to pick and choose how you debut and make the perfect circumstances. A lot of times, an opportunity gets thrown your way, and you just got to decide, do I jump on it or do I wait and take my chances? And Patchy was done waiting, and yeah. I commend him for that. It's just now going to make it a little bit more complicated. But I also think in the fight game, we overreact sometimes because we've seen the elites of the elites, the John Jones of the world, Connor in his run, Ronda in her run, like winning from the jump and having these unbelievable streaks. Most fighters don't have that. And that's what makes some of these elite fighters household names. But to get to a championship fight is still very much in the cards for Mix. It's just about how you kind of lick your wounds and rebound from this.
So he falls, and as we're talking about, like, his path to getting the hype back, how many chances do these guys usually get in the UFC? Like, could his next fight or next two fights be to kind of stay in the promotion on top of kind of build the hype back up?
I mean, if he were to lose his next fight, like, then that definitely changes the dynamic quite a bit. Right now, I think, depending on how many fights, you know, the details of how many fight contract you sign is usually not out there. I'd bet it's somewhere around a five fight deal or something around that. I mean, some guys have signed 10, 12 fight deals, depending on, you know, their level of stardom and all that kind of stuff. So I don't think there's any panic that's worth it at this stage. But yeah, the more that you don't win, the more it continues to kind of drop you down. I don't know if you guys played those boxing video games back in the day. Like, I used to play Knockout. What was it
Knockout
called?
Kings 2002? Yeah, that was my game. Let's go.
And you remember, like, if you started winning some fights, you got to 8 or 9 wins, and you're, like, climbing up the charts. One loss really just pushed you all the way down, and you have to kind of rebuild. It's kind of like that in a lot of ways. And, you know, to lose to the number 10 fighter, think about it this way. To lose to the number 10 fighter, now you're probably going to get somebody in your next fight that's not even ranked. So now you have to think about, what does that win do for you when the opponent isn't somebody that's really in the mix either? So you're going to have to win a fight or two just to get an opponent that's going to earn you some, you know, real points in terms of moving up in the rankings or getting ranked to begin with. That's the great thing about the UFC, the beautiful part about it. You're one really great finish away from the entire conversation around you changing.
Matt Parrino on the Western Hotline. A little bit on Patchy Mix and his UFC debut, which happened over the weekend. Of course, we're also gearing up for another fight, the Bills and James Cook. And Adam Schefter's latest reporting that he does not believe Cook will be in town for quite some time. Matt, this morning we're kind of talking about the roads that this could take. You know, we've kind of danced around it for a while, and tomorrow it could escalate if Cook is not here at mandatory minicamp.
Yeah, it definitely escalates a little bit, but I still think that he's trying to play the game and make a statement. So I don't know if my antenna goes up all the way if he's not here this week, only because the real test is training camp, right? Because then he's messing with his future a little bit. I mean, based on some of the reports that came out from the salary cap folks, I know Joel Corey, the former agent, put out a tweet a couple days ago, like, if he doesn't show up for training camp, he doesn't get an accrued season. And so I don't think that he's going to mess around with that. it's all eyes on for Cook. If he doesn't feel like he's going to re-sign with the Bills, it's all about this season producing and going out and getting the best deal that he can. And I was listening to you guys a little while ago. I agree on a lot of what you said. Like, I'm not closing the door on the Bills saying at some point we do want to make a deal and let's continue to negotiate this thing. The business side of it, from the outside looking in, I think always gets every negotiation tactic employee gets like, you know, we talk it to death, but it's really part of the game. And you've got to figure out a way to get, you know, Brandon Bean, he is a thrifty shopper. He is not going to come out of the gates. The only reason those four deals got done this offseason is because he got great savings on all of those contracts, most notably Christian Benford, who if you do a Twitter search for Benford, people still are talking about the number that came in on him as one of the great steals of not only this offseason, but the last couple offseasons. That's how Bean operates. And I think that they're doing their part, whether it's Brady, whether it's McDermott, whether it's, you know, Bean with his folks, of keeping this thing as positive as possible and just say, listen, we want him to come back. We want him to have a big season, prove it. I think he ends up doing that at training camp. So that's why I'm not maybe as invested in the mini camp watch as most. But as it stays in the news, the other part of this thing is you're really betting on the guy, because Brandon has shown over the course of his time here, he is going to get out of situations that are potential distractions. I mean, he got out of Diggs way before anybody thought that he would. And this is something that has the potential to become a distraction the longer it goes along. But I'm also, the other piece of this thing too is I'm higher on Ray Davis than I think most people are. Like, I think in a post-James Cook world, Ray Davis could be your number one. You could draft a running back next year and maybe start that tandem again with Ty Johnson in the fold as that guy that, you know, just locks down that backup spot every single season, no matter who else is here, it seems. But I think that plays into it too. What do you think of Ray Davis and what he can be in this offense? Because in a limited role last year, I think he was great. And I think also, if he's on the field even 15 to 20% more of the time, if he gets 8 to 10 more carries in the red zone, what do his numbers look like? And if that happened last year, are we having a different conversation around Cook?
Matt Parrino on the Western Hotline. All right, Matt. We'll be waiting to see who shows up, and off to training camp we go. Thanks for the time, and thanks for the chat on Patchy Mix as well. It was fun kind of getting invested, and hopefully he can bounce back and we can get right back to where we were.
Also, thank you for allowing me to now go down the Knockout Kings rabbit hole, because I've already have that happening at this moment. What a great game.
If you find that a downloadable link on our phones and we could just restart that thing,
Oh. Give
me the link and we'll get after it.
Definitely.
All right, boys, take care.
Thanks, Matt. I'm trying to remember what boxing game I played the most of.
This one had all the legends in it.
Yeah,
like
Kings.
Ali's on the cover. Yeah. I was always Joe Frazier, the left hook. Couldn't stop it. Friends never knew what to do with it.
They changed the name, the EA game, to Fight Night, didn't they?
Yeah, that sounds familiar. I don't think I ever bought it after. I only had the one game, so I don't remember what years that would have been, but it was Fight Night at some point. Yeah.
Meanwhile, watching that Patchy Mix fight, the fighter before him, I think his name was Kevin Holland.
Uh-huh.
He won, and in the welterweight division, it was awesome because, I mean, I read a lot of books about Muhammad Ali. He fought long before I ever could have had a chance to watch him. I found him one of the most fascinating athletes and loved everything about him. I mean, if you know me and what I talk about, I love athletes with attitude and just swagger and the talk. I think it's amazing. Kevin Holland was like Ali used to, talking during the fight.
Yeah.
Trash talking really the guy cool. During the fight.
I love that.
And then afterwards, when interviewed in the Octagon by Rogan, started referencing Ali. I'm like,
yeah,
this is my guy, Kevin Holland. Love this guy. So anyway, had a good time watching the fights on Saturday. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. When we return, it is U.S. Open week. They'll be at Oakmont, a course that each and every day that goes by, I found out something more ridiculous about it. This course has some wild facts, including one that from the blimp coverage is going to catch your eye.
Yeah, of course it concerns me. You know, you don't want to shoot high scores like the one I did today. You know, still, I felt like I came here, obviously, with a new driver, thinking that that sort of was going to be good and solve some of the problems off the tee, but it didn't. So, you know, and obviously going to Oakmont next week, what you need to do more than anything else there is hit fairways. So, yeah, still sort of searching for the sort of missing piece off the tee. And obviously for me, when I get that part of the game clicking, then everything falls into place for me. But right now that isn't. And yeah, that's a concern going into next week.
Rory was a mess at the Canadian Open. How about that quote? Yeah, I came here thinking the new driver was going to fix everything, and it didn't.
Mm.
One of us.
One of us. Literally. One of us. Literally one of us.
Yeah. So yeah. Josh Schmidt's back. You were on vacation. The whole gang's here. Jeremy, Joe, Owen, Josh. Well, you were on vacation, unfortunately. You were not here. The three of us went and played Oakmont on the simulator.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the notes of playing it on the simulator was we're standing on a tee box, and I don't know who it was. It said, like, is that a highway that runs through this course? The Pennsylvania Turnpike goes through the course.
Yeah. Really?
And I mean through it.
Yeah.
Not one side of it. It goes through the course, the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
How do you play around that? Like,
so it's interesting. I found this article about this where it was – you know, however many years ago they put the highway through there and they gave them $70,000 for the land. There's a couple of bridges that go over it. One of the key pieces of this architecture is that if you're on the highway, you don't know you're going by a golf course, because if you did, you would, like, people would beep all the time.
Because there's a cliff or something in between.
Yeah, it's kind of it's down in the ground. So people are just driving. They don't know what's on the sides unless you know the area.
Right.
So, yeah.
So seven holes are separated from two through eight. Are separated from the rest.
Across a highway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting note. Oakmont, the stimp, like the
gotta be a little noisy because of that, huh?
You can hear the traffic is what people say.
Yeah, I don't like that.
The greens are apparently rolling. I read an article today at 14, which...
What does that mean?
It means super fast. A player... Okay.
What's the scale out of?
10 is like normal.
Yeah-ish. Okay.
11 is fast. 12 is really fast. 13 is what they apparently play at Oakmont all the time because the members are crazy. And the members want it all the way to 14 for this tournament. The members at Oakmont, this is what these tournaments actually become.
Yeah.
Is we'd like our 500 members to feel really good about themselves. Let's make these professional golfers look like complete losers.
Uh-huh.
And that's what they're going to do here. So the stimp I saw was 14. One player made a joke that if you mark your ball on the green with a nickel, the nickel will slide off the green. That's how fast they're going to be.
I also saw that one of the greens is like the practice green and a regular green.
Yeah.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Green, like
shared space.
Yeah, it's a massive green, and someone was like, yeah, this is because it's the practice green and it's the regular green.
You know, there's one other fact about Oakmont that I'd seen over the years. When it opened initially at Oakmont, the course opened in 1904. It was a par 80 course. There were...
I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah. There were 8 par 5s.
Uh-huh.
And a par 6 in 1904.
A par 80.
Par 80.
Have you ever played a par 6?
No. Where's the closest par 6?
There's one. Oh, there's someone. I think there's one in Western New York somewhere. I'm pretty sure there's one in New York somewhere.
Yeah? I'd like to play a par 6.
There are...
Wait till you see that double bogey.
Yeah, how many of them are there? I'll have to find it. Maybe there's more than just a couple in the U.S.
A par six means I'm on. The idea is you're on the green in four.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a green in regulation.
Yeah, that's right.
Find me the closest par six.
This is the 18th hole at Cherry Creek Golf Links in Riverhead, New York. That's north of New York City, I think.
It's a par six.
That's not the one I was thinking of, although that appears to be the only one I could find that has a par six in New York State.
My prediction for the Open is that players are going to go nuclear with how mad they're going to be.
Yeah.
They're going to be so...
they.
If you like that...
Is happening more recently than ever?
I don't know.
Was this happening when Tiger was playing? Everyone getting mad at the courses? Or was Tiger dominating like, oh, I guess it can be done? So how I can't get mad about it.
They're going to be so mad. Those greens, that rough.
Uh-huh. There's two par sixes in Virginia. There's one in Florida. There's one in Idaho, North Carolina, Black Mountain Golf Club.
Yeah. Texting with a Bills fan friend of ours, Bubba, who works on the tour, and he said yesterday he walked five holes with Adam Scott. Now, Adam Scott's a good player. Adam Scott is consistently like, hey, every week, look at that. He's not terrible again. He's dressed in all tan, and he made the cut, and he's in the he walked five holes with Adam Scott, and he was plus three through five holes. I'm like, if you don't hit the fairways, you are toast.
Yeah,
man, gonna be. They're gonna be mad.
The longest hole. How many yards do you think the longest hole in the U.S. is? Would you guess?
I would guess it's 874 yards.
Oh, look at that! It's a great guess. 888 yards. Oh,
well, the pin was up that day.
The ninth at the Lynx in Post Falls, Idaho.
I shot it with the gun.
It's a par.
I had 874. You say 80, but fine.
It's a par seven.
In Idaho?
Yeah. So that would be green in regulation in five.
On in five. Hey, I've been on in five before.
The longest in the world in South Korea, there's a par seven that measures 1,097 yards at Gunsan Country Club. 1,097 yards.
Plays downhill. 1,097. It plays more like 950.
Right.
All right, we'll get a break in. 803-0550, mandatory minicamp tomorrow for the Bills. And the James Cook story rolls on. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.